Joining me now is Roger Stone. Roger, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Brandon, great to be back with you.
What do you make? I got a weather balloon size of three buses flying over the U.S. and the Pentagon doesn't seem to know what to do about it.
Yeah, it's really extraordinary. I mean, it's a violation of U.S. sovereignty. The criteria that they put forward for taking no action is irrelevant. Let me ask you this. If we sent any kind of aircraft up to do surveillance over Chinese airspace, what do you think would happen?
Oh, yeah, they would consider that an act of war.
I mean, so the lesson here is that weakness breeds aggression. Weakness is what breeds war. And all of our adversaries, whether it is the Iranians, whether it is the Russians, whether it is the Chinese, they look at Joe Biden and his feckless foreign policy and they see nothing but weakness. That is why they're emboldened. I don't know if you saw this, but an excellent video by President Donald Trump two or three days ago, perhaps maybe four, in which he said that if he were to return to the White House, he would ban any Chinese national or anybody connected to the Chinese state, because there are no private citizens. Everything belongs to the state. So if you're in this country doing business, you're really representing the Chinese Communist Party. He would ban any Chinese national or entity or anyone fronting for them from owning any farmland, ranch land, harbor, airport, bridge, road, tunnel, toll plaza, particularly real estate near military facilities or near national security facilities. In Canada, by the way, no foreign national can purchase property. It's illegal. And it's time for us to do the same thing here, at least as far as the Chinese are concerned, because they are, as you know, systematically buying up the country. It's not just their acquisition of rare minerals in Africa and elsewhere around the world, but there is a systematic effort here in the United States to buy up land. The Agriculture Department of this administration says that the Chinese communists, or pardon me, Chinese nationals own 160,000 acres, which is absurd because they own 340,000 in Oklahoma alone, one state, just wow. One state. So all the numbers coming out of the Agriculture Department about ownership by the Chinese of land in this country are completely and totally incorrect, meaning understated. A bold position by Trump. There is legislation in the House. It's been pending since the last Congress for such a ban on Chinese ownership. But it's going to take the election of a new president and a new Congress to do this.
Absolutely. All right, Roger, I want to go through some stuff and get your response. You're a historian. You've been on the front row. You know about the corruption of the FBI, the CIA, all of this. Here is something I have been researching the last few days. Was the CIA involved in rigging our election? In my research, look what I found at CIA.gov. You can't make this up. This is actually on the CIA.gov website. Helms says, that'd be Jesse Helms, North Carolina U.S. Senator. We all remember Jesse. Jesse Helms says CIA rigged election in El Salvador. This is Washington Times, May 9th. 1984, Senator Jesse Helms, Republican, North Carolina, is charged that the CIA, quote, bought the election, end quote, of El Salvador's apparent president-elect, Napoleon Duarte? Duarte? I don't know if I'm saying that right.
And Duarte.
Is that right, you think? Duarte?
Duarte.
Duarte. And the Salvadorian people should, quote, take whatever steps they deem necessary in the light of the facts, end quote. El Salvador has several military coups in its history, and Mr. Helms added to the speculation that another could occur, saying, quote, in assuming power through a rigged election, Mr. Duarte runs the real risk of touching off another conflagration in a war-torn land, end quote. Mr. Helms said that Mr. Duarte, who is the apparent winner of Sunday's runoff election for president, is a socialist who is, quote, without a mandate to rule or the arguments to produce national unity, end quote. In the same statement released last night by his office, Mr. Helms said the right-wing candidate Roberto de Albuazan has been unjustly accused of links to death squads and that he actually, quote, espoused the principles of the Republican Party in the U.S., end quote. Mr. Helm charged yesterday that the CIA and State Department for 2 years have funneled funds and other assistance directly into Mr. Duterte's campaign without Reagan's approval. No response was immediately available from the White House or State Department to the senator's charges. Last week, Mr. Helms asked President Reagan to remove the U.S. ambassador in El Salvador, Thomas Pickering, because he allegedly aided Mr. Duterte's candidacy. But yesterday, Mr. Helms said the ambassador was one player in a larger drama. Mr. Helms said that the funding decision was made by the Interagency Group on Central America that coordinates policy in the executive branch. Mr. Helms said the U.S. efforts to control the election outcome undermine, quote, the whole purpose of our policy in El Salvador to build democracy, end quote. Now, this is getting interesting. Mr. Helms said that the support reportedly, this would be the support our government and groups gave him, reportedly included funds for 400 precinct organizers, a model press operation, technical advice, and funds for the, quote, computer voter registration system that disenfranchised 20% of the voters the first time around, end quote. The United States aided in the voter registration procedures, which were opposed by the conservative, more conservative candidate. You know, this is interesting because what it tells me is that going back to 1984, this is one of many examples we can show where the CIA was involved in color revolutions, coup d'etats, etc. And then we bring the playbook right back home after it's been practiced.
No, I don't even think our CIA makes any bones about it. We have been manipulating foreign governments and foreign elections. We have staged coups in Guatemala, for example. We staged a coup in Ukraine against a duly elected democratic government, which we didn't like after all of our chest beating about democracy. The Central Intelligence Agency also has very clearly had the technology to exercise these computerized shenanigans in foreign elections. So the only question, Brandon, is whether proof exists that this same technology that has been used in multiple foreign elections by our intelligence agency to get the results we want was turned and used on the American people in 2020.
Well, and here's a letter I found this week. I shared it last night, I believe, December, or maybe it was on radio the other day, December 10, 2020. December 10, 2020, Congress of the United States, House of Representatives, Washington, D.C. It is a letter to the Inspector General, the Honorable Peter M. Thompson, and it is also CC'd to the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the Honorable Gina Haspel, as well as John Reichlif, Director of National Intelligence. It is written by and signed by Congressman Bill Posey of Florida. Do you know Congressman Bill Posey?
I certainly am well aware of him. He is a good man. He's an America First Republican. He's a solid conservative.
Well, that's what I figured you'd hear from him. Here is what he wrote December 10th, 2020, in part. I'll skip the first paragraph for the sake of time. He does state the states in question, talking about the election and what was going on in our elections in 2020 and the abnormalities that happened, anomalies that happened. He said the states in question concerning these software anomalies used Dominion voting systems, according to the Washington Times. The election software used in Dominion equipment has corporate origins that can be traced back to Smartmatic Corporation. My understanding is that the origins of Smartmatic began in Venezuela under the regime of Hugo Chavez. The election software was used for the presidential elections that President Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro won. In each of these elections, opposition parties claimed that fraud occurred. In fact, a 2013 U.S. Department of State country report on Venezuela states in the executive summary that, quote, authorities announced that Nicolas Maduro had won the presidency April 14, 2013, by a 1.49% margin amid allegations of pre- and post-election fraud based on a number of irregularities, including government interference, the use of state resources by the ruling party, and voter manipulation, end quote. Furthermore, in a recent sworn affidavit filed with a Georgia election lawsuit, a key witness describes firsthand accounts of how Hugo Chavez asked Smartmatic to design new election system for Venezuela and, quote, was most insistent that Smartmatic design the system in a way that the system could change the vote of each voter without being detected, end quote. I understand, writes the congressman, that Smartmatic went on to participate in every Venezuelan election until 2018. The witness goes on to state that in 2013 election, the, quote, Smartmatic electoral management system was used to manipulate and change the results for the person to succeed Hugo Chavez, end quote. It is concerning that the creation of such a system could have circumvented the will of the Venezuelan people and contributed to keeping Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro in power while their people suffered greatly. Another software program used for reporting election results is Seidel's. Seidel's Clarity Elections Election Night Reporting System. Clarity is used by the news media for vote counting and reporting results. According to Seidel's website, the Clarity service is provided for 28 states. In 2019, there were reports of alleged anomalies of Clarity's reporting during the gubernatorial race in Kentucky. During a CNN broadcast of the race, there appeared to be a decrease of 560 votes for one Republican candidate and an increase of 560 votes in favor of the Democratic candidate. It's just one example identified of votes decreasing for the Republican candidate using that system. It's also worth noting that the corporate headquarters for both companies are located outside the United States. Dominion Voting Systems is located in Toronto, Canada, and Seidel's headquarters is located in Barcelona, Spain. Our nation's election system should not be dependent on software and voting machines supplied from foreign companies. I'll skip down a little bit. Knowing the origins of Smartmatic software, was the Central Intelligence Agency aware of its use in Dominion equipment during previous U.S. elections and the 2020 general election? Question mark. If so, did the CIA report the vulnerabilities of this software to other federal agencies or states? Question mark. Has the Inspector General's office conducted a national security investigation on the CIA's connection, if any, with Smartmatic, Seidel, or any other company associated with election software or hardware? Question mark. Did foreign actors interfere in our election in states that use this questionable software? And finally, please provide all relevant documents that deal with the question above. He goes on to say, I urge you to fully investigate the CIA's role involving these election companies. What I find interesting is his first questions about the CIA were all done with questions and question marks. His last statement was no question. I urge you to fully investigate the CIA's role involving these election companies. I had conversations yesterday with some people on Capitol Hill that are staffers, very well versed with this letter, and the stack of letters that Bill Posey and others were writing to Bill Barr and others on this matter. They believe this is the kind of thing that should be investigated with the new weaponization committee of Jim Jordan and others. Some of them are telling me they're very, very concerned that the CIA has been heavily involved.
Let me guess. The good congressman has had no response to that letter.
You're exactly 100% right.
No substantive response. No, look, this is not new. In the late 1980s, largely because of the public outcry that was caused by Oliver Stone's documentary, JFK, the House was forced, mostly by public pressure, to form a new select committee to revisit the assassinations of both President John Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. The people who staffed those investigations, strangely enough, were mostly veteran organized crime investigators and prosecutors. The Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI both played rope-a-dope with that committee, but never submitted anyone to provide testimony, nor did they supply any documents whatsoever. You have an arrogant deep state. You have an arrogant, I'd go further than say executive branch. You have an arrogant ruling elite within our government who don't have any regard for the role of congressional oversight. And it really shows Republicans watching today the limitations on having control of one house of Congress. Until a patriot is back in the White House, until the executive branch of the government returns to the hands of a patriot, and until there are more conservatives in the third branch of government, the judiciary, then you can expect the intelligence agencies to just ignore any effort to uncover their role in any malfeasance. The Central Intelligence Agency under John Brennan, a man who is an admitted communist, a man who converted to radical Islamism, and that is a fact. That's not conjecture. John Guandolo, who was stationed with the agency in Ridda at the same time as John Brennan, certifies that. John Brennan, the CIA director, who gave travel visas to four of the terrorists, the Saudi terrorists who attacked this country on 9/11. That John Brennan is one of the major architects of the entire Russian collusion hoax. No, Mr. Director, the Russian intelligence never conducted an online hack of the Democratic National Committee. That's a lie for which there is no evidence or proof whatsoever. Nor did the Russians give that information to WikiLeaks. That's another lie. So none of this is new. The Central Intelligence Agency, and to the pretty much the same degree, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, really are not regulated or not overseen by anyone. They simply do whatever they want.
Look at this. I know you'll know about this, obviously, with a lot of background as the historian you are. Washington Post, December 22nd, 1963, former President Harry S. Truman writes an article talking about why he started the CIA and his great concerns about what the agency has become. In fact, he closes, "For some time I've been disturbed by the way the CIA has been diverted from its original assignment. It's become an operational and at times a policy-making arm of the government. This has led to trouble and many compounded and may have compounded our difficulties in several explosive areas." This comes, of course, 1 month after the murder of a sitting president, President John F. Kennedy, that many believe the CIA had a role in playing. And then here's President Truman, who started the CIA and explains why he did, showing his great concerns. What do you know about this op-ed from 1963?
I know that it was spiked after it ran in one edition. That's what I know.
It was spiked. So in other
correct.
Words, like...
It ran for one edition, and then it was spiked at the request of the Central Intelligence Agency.
So it was supposed to have run for another. It was going to run in another publication.
No, they would have run it in multiple editions. So in those days, newspapers had an evening edition. They had a morning edition. Right. It ran one edition, then it was killed. Ben Bradley, the publisher of the Central Intelligence Agency, pardon me, the publisher of the Washington Post, admits in his biography that he worked for the CIA. The Washington Post is essentially the newsletter of Langley, always has been, always would be. So they killed an op-ed by a former president of the United States because he criticized the rogue nature of the CIA. Think about that for a moment. I'm surprised you can even find that online. It's difficult to find.
You know how long I had to look for it to finally find it?
Quite a while.
Quite some time. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's because Google's in on the act, you see. So you have to go all the way down to the bottom of the search. On page 78, you might find it in a Google search, maybe a Google News search. Maybe.
So the CIA has been controlling our media for a long time. Back then in 63, it was newspapers. Today, it appears to be, obviously, this headline from the New York Post: Twitter, Facebook stocked with ex-FBI CIA officials in key posts. So then they were controlling the newspapers. Now they're controlling social media, Roger.
Well, social media, of course, is the new media of the day. So at the end of Watergate, when Carl Bernstein began to believe that his partner, Bob Woodward, was going to cut him out of some of the big bucks that they were making together with their fabricated story of Watergate. And I'm sure you saw this past week, President Donald Trump filed a lawsuit against former Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward. Well, Woodward lied about Watergate. He lied about Deep Throat. He lied about John Belushi because he wrote a book on him. He lied about former CIA director Bill Casey. He lied about Iran-Contra. I mean, he lied about his own service as a naval intelligence officer. He lies about who his sources are in Watergate. He admits that the Pentagon is spying on Richard Nixon and has a spy ring inside the White House because they don't like Nixon's idea of peace. He lies about all these things. I mean, literally, virtually nothing Bob Woodward writes is actually true. He writes, for example, that when CIA Director Bill Casey was hospitalized after a stroke, that he, Woodward, slipped into Casey's office and Casey confessed everything about the Iran-Contra weapons for hostages scandal at a time that Bill Casey's daughter and his wife told me that the director had been felled by a stroke that left him without the capacity of speech. So Bill Casey could not have told Bob Woodward that. Bob Woodward is perhaps the biggest liar in the media. But to go back to this story, because it's important, Bernstein threatens the establishment by writing a piece for Rolling Stone on Operation Mockingbird. And he lays it all out there, essentially saying, if you guys aren't going to let me make money, I'm going to expose the fact that you, the Central Intelligence Agency, have been paying reporters at all levels in television, radio, newspapers, and so on. Operation Mockingbird is the ancestor to what we see today, where the agencies are deeply embedded in the big social media companies. What's amazing, actually, is the way prior to this election, their total monopoly on information, particularly as it pertained to Hunter Biden's laptop, actually held together through the election. They were successful in shutting down anyone who wanted to repost or discuss or highlight the New York Post's groundbreaking series on Hunter Biden's laptop. Then, as you know, they rolled out 50 former or current intelligence officers, more of them Republicans than Democrats, to insist that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. Today, just today, Hunter Biden's lawyers admit that the laptop is real because they're going to seek to somehow punish or vilify those who played a perfectly legal role in making the laptop contents public. So this is a classic technique of the left. In order to distract people from the actual content of Hunter Biden's laptop, which essentially memorializes the epic corruption and debauchery and treason of Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Jim Biden. In order to distract us, we're now going to create a controversy about how this information became public, which is irrelevant and immaterial. I read the story that Abby Lowell, the lawyer for Hunter Biden, wrote to the Attorney General of Delaware, the U.S. Attorney in Delaware, threatening Rudy Giuliani, John Paul McIsaac, the computer repairman who got the laptop, who repaired it, who had a service agreement with Hunter Biden, which stipulated that if Hunter Biden's laptop was not picked up 90 days after he was informed that it was ready, that the property would revert back to the shop owner, a legal document in the state of Delaware. So anyone who charges John Paul McIsaac with stealing the laptop, which Hunter Biden did today, John Paul McIsaac filed a defamation lawsuit against Hunter. So this is really going to get right. The point here, of course, is that we're trying to create a diversion. This is not about how the laptop became public. Everything in that chain of custody is based on what I've read and what I know. Just from following the media is entirely legal. This is a smokescreen. This is an effort to divert you from the actual corruption at hand. But I would say this. It's one thing for Abby Lowell, who's a very able lawyer, to write a threatening letter. If he files any of these things in court, he's going to get sanctioned. He doesn't have a case. He has no case.
In other words, he's going to get fined by the court.
Well, none of the citations, you know, interstate commerce, theft of personal property. This is what is known as BS, Abby. File it in a lawsuit and you'll get sanctioned. And if McIsaac or Giuliani's lawyers don't move for sanctions, there's something wrong with them. You have no case. You're just trying to hide the fact that Hunter Biden is an epic criminal. But to say that somehow his laptop was stolen and lagged to the New York Post, no, that's categorically false. The dumbass left it with a computer repairman. He was told multiple times to pick it up, and he didn't.
Wow. Let me go back to the Truman letter real quick, 1963. 1 month. Really, 1 month to the day, right? November 22nd, 1963, right?
Yep.
So 1 month to the day, the sitting president is murdered. Many believe the CIA was involved. In fact, I've got a headline here. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says CIA murdered JFK, his uncle. So 1 month to the day, coincidental that the president, former president who started the CIA, says this is kind of what this has turned out to be, not what I started. I mean, the date that it was published, 1 month from the murder of a sitting president in broad daylight, is very interesting with the date. Do you think there's a coincidence as to what drove Truman to write this letter and have it published on that date?
I don't know. I remember that it was published shortly after the Kennedy assassination, but it didn't make much of a ripple because, as I said, the story was spiked after one edition of the newspaper. There were multiple editions published every day of a major newspaper in those days. But we also, as you know, only a week ago, and Tucker Carlson spoke about this on the air, a Watergate-era audio tape was uncovered of former President Richard Nixon, then President Richard Nixon, talking to the CIA director, and he basically tells him, may I quote it directly, "I know who shot John," he said. So Nixon is basically mired in Watergate, threatening the Central Intelligence Agency director, saying, look, I know your darkest secrets. So if I'm going down, you're going with me, basically. It's more evidence. You got substantial evidence when President Trump declassified a substantial number of the documents surrounding the Kennedy assassination, but not all of them. And then later, when Biden also declassified some of the documents, but not all of them, each one of them moves the CIA closer to the plot, shows that the Central Intelligence Agency dissembled about their knowledge of Oswald and his background. I think there's very little question that Robert Kennedy Jr. is absolutely correct, that Tucker Carlson is absolutely correct.
And they also murdered, so the CIA was involved along with Lyndon Johnson, some high-ranking Secret Service, mob figures. They were all involved in the murder of a sitting president for their various reasons. And then they went on, and the CIA was likely involved in the murder of JFK Jr.'s father, correct?
Yes, I believe so. I think the same forces that murdered John Kennedy murdered Robert Kennedy. It is not incidental that just preceding the murder of Robert Kennedy, J. Edgar Hoover has Dr. Martin Luther King on a wiretap, and he overhears King tell one of his lieutenants that he's preparing to endorse Bobby Kennedy for president. I guarantee you that J. Edgar Hoover had that on Lyndon Johnson's desk within minutes. Then Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, speaking to a college audience in just before the California primary, when asked the same question he's been asked many times, he's asked if elected president, he would reopen the investigation into his brother's assassination. But for the first time ever, he says yes. He had always kind of quietly and grudgingly said he believed the Warren Commission report, although there's a lot of evidence that neither he nor Jacqueline Kennedy ever actually believed the Warren Commission report. Robert Kennedy's problem was that he couldn't prove it. Lyndon Johnson controlled all of the machinery of government, the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Justice. So Robert Kennedy could not prove, without being elected president, who actually killed his brother. There are as many anomalies and irregularities surrounding the murder of Robert Kennedy as there are of John Kennedy, the most obvious one. The autopsy shows that Robert Kennedy was shot at point-blank range from the left rear, literally at the base of his skull. Yet Sirhan Sirhan, who we are supposed to believe is the assassination, is never at any time behind Kennedy. He's always in front of him. That would indicate more than one gunman. Sirhan is shooting wildly, which is, I think, designed to distract people. the Los Angeles Police Department could not have botched the investigation any worse than they did if they had tried. They're still digging bullets out of the woodwork in the kitchen pantry where Bobby Kennedy is killed weeks after the assassination. A man and a woman wearing a polka dot dress, are seen fleeing the pantry, and she is shrieking, "We got him, we got him." Never any follow-up or explanation of that.
And was she not tied back to somebody in a CIA program that brainwashed people and used words to control them? Did I not read that she was somehow tied back to some mind control group?
I'm unfamiliar with that, so I don't want to speculate on
it. Okay.
But I do think it is safe to say that the threat of Robert Kennedy, empowered by an endorsement from Dr. King, within weeks of those two things happening, both King and Kennedy are dead. Now, you live, you know, pretty close to Memphis. No one thinks James Earl Ray acted alone and killed
King. The King family didn't. The King family didn't. And they actually won a trial and won $1. All they were doing is seeking to prove that James Earl Ray didn't do it. And they were working on getting him a new trial. He died of cancer, I believe it was, before he could do that. One of the judges that was supposed to be working on the case, who was working on the case, saw a lot of the records as he worked on the case, was Judge Joe Brown. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Judge Joe Brown, but he is set at this news desk. He was a very popular television judge as well. I think he just announced he's running for mayor of Memphis, believe it or not. But he is a very popular television judge, like Judge Judy, Judge Joe Brown. He sat here at this desk laying out the evidence for why James Earl Ray was innocent, didn't do it, was a patsy like the Kennedy guy, Oswald. And while there's strong evidence, unfortunately, that our government did it, and James Earl Ray, Judge Joe Brown has said at this news desk, and that's in my archive somewhere.
I think it's more important to characterize the civil lawsuit correctly. So the King family brought a wrongful death lawsuit, a civil lawsuit against the FBI, the Secret Service, the Department of Justice, and the Memphis Police. And they won.
Right.
That is a certification that there was a conspiracy involving those entities to kill Dr. King. The question of the incorrect conviction of James Earl Ray is a separate question. Now, the lawyer who represented the King family, who won at trial, must have been more able as a lawyer than he was as an author, because I've tried several times to read his book on this case, and it is very, very, very ponderous. It's an enormous, huge book, but the bottom line of it is the same. The King family proved in a civil federal courtroom that there was a government conspiracy to kill Dr. King. The next step would have been the exoneration of James Earl Ray. Of course, as you point out, that didn't happen because of Ray's death, making the question moot.
Wow. Let's go to a clip by from the World Economic Forum, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, talking about the government working with big tech.
I think the sophistication of the private sector is improving, and particularly important, the level of collaboration between the private sector and the government, especially the FBI, has, I think, made significant strides. Pretty much every technology we could talk about today, we see both great opportunity, but great dangers in the wrong hand.
All right, so there you go. Kind of shocking that FBI director would even be hanging out with all of these weirdos at the World Economic Forum.
Yeah, we're having a crime epidemic in this country, but he's in Switzerland genuflecting to the global atheist elite. It's really disgraceful. But there it is. He just said it. In other words, what's dangerous to these people is free expression. What's dangerous to them is everybody being allowed to express an opinion no matter what it is. Free speech is what they hate. The left loves free speech as long as it's theirs. But if you disagree with them, you're a dangerous terrorist, as opposed to just being an American who has a different point of view or a different opinion than them. The hateful nature of it is really extraordinary. Look, it is really great, for example, to be restored at Twitter. And people can follow me at Twitter at Roger J. Stone Jr., Roger J. Stone Jr. I'm not sure how many people watching your program, Brandon, weren't banned on Twitter long ago, but there might be two or three people watching who are still on Twitter. But the invective and the hate that I get in comments every day is really quite extraordinary. By the way, I don't even engage you. I just block you. So don't, if you're a hater, don't bother. Don't bother calling me a traitor. Don't bother pointing out that I have a distinctively shaped but incredibly handsome head. Don't even bother, because I'm just going to block you.
Good for you, Roger. All right, now before we get into, for a few more minutes with Roger, for Wes Peters joins us, a big decision yesterday related to Roger himself. I want to play a quick clip of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking more about the CIA, because Roger, I believe there's overwhelmingly abundant evidence of the CIA being involved in the tabletop exercise Event 201 in October of 2019, before coronavirus popped out. There's the CIA running a tabletop exercise with others at what was called Event 201. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to make the case here. The CIA has been heavily involved in all of this, which, of course, that gave the justification for rolling out ballots, drop boxes, and a lot of other things that they used to steal the election and take it from Donald Trump, who I think the intelligence community hated about as much as they hated President Kennedy, who said he was, going to smash up the CIA and throw it into the wind into 1,000 pieces. So I think you got the CIA involved in controlling the media, controlling the narrative. I think you got the CIA involved potentially in voter fraud, and you got a couple of U.S. congressmen, and particularly Bill Posey, asking, hey, has anyone investigated the connections of the CIA and the voting machine companies? And so you have COVID sets a stage, you have the election, you control the media, and it seems like the CIA keeps popping up at all of it. Play this and get your response of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Which is, in my, when I was writing my book, one of the, you know, the most momentous and shocking discoveries that I encountered and that I made, you know, in my research was seeing the deep involvement of the intelligence agencies in this public health space. Mm-hmm. The last chapter of my book shows this series of tabletop exercises, about 20 tabletop exercises that took place between 1999, that was sponsored, all of them, by the CIA, but involving a lot of, you know, important, hundreds of thousands of people took part in these pandemic simulations. And what each one of them did, and by the way, the people who were taking part in them were from Europe, United States, Canada, and the rest of the world, the rest of the Western world. And they, Australia, Mexico, for example, they were public health officials. They were frontline responders. They were people who worked for utilities, hospital systems, politicians. There were big shots in each one. Bill Gates, Madeleine Albright, Tom Daschle. And to give them kind of an imprimatur of legitimacy. But what they each did was they'd take a simulated pandemic and they'd show what the response was. And the response was not a public health response. It was the imposition of totalitarian control. Mm-hmm. So they weren't talking about providing vitamin D to people, mm-hmm. or stockpiling, you know, or quarantining the sick and, you know, and keeping constitutional rights, which is something that you got to think of in a pandemic, mm-hmm. et cetera. They weren't doing any of that stuff. What they were doing is, how do we use this pandemic to suppress free speech, to censor social media and the media, to close churches, to lock down society, to force people to wear masks, and then funnel them into the chute of mass vaccination with a quickly created and untested zero-liability vaccine. Every one of them does the same thing. None of them is about public health. It's a militarized and monetized response. Mm-hmm. And they're play-acting all of these strategies for how do we get Americans to go along with us. Well, the CIA, and you know, has for many, many years, has studied ways of doing not only individual manipulation, but doing mass manipulation of society. How do you go into a developing country or an indigenous country, turn the population, cause so economic chaos, shut down the economy, polarize people against each other, and create violence and chaos to the point where that country will be happy to have an outside you know,
Machiavellian
entity come in and control the whole thing? And how do you sow fear and use propaganda, et cetera? One of the ways the CIA figured out all of these methodologies, which is put in handbook after handbook, and, you know, the CIA does not do public health, by the way. It does coup d'etats against democracy. So between 1947 and 1998, the CIA was involved in 87 coup d'etats against a third of the nations on Earth, most of them democracies. So that's what they do. The way that they studied this is they farmed out studies to sociologists at about 300 universities. These were programs called MKUltra, MKSurge, Operation Artichoke, et cetera. But it was all done by the universities, billions and billions of dollars. One of those studies took place in the 1960s and 70s, and it was done by early 1970s by a guy called Stanley Milgram, who was a young associate professor at Yale. And Milgram recruited people from every walk of American life, black people, white people, students, professors, professionals, every kind of American. He would put the subject in a room, sit them on a chair, and there was a dial in front of them. And they were told there was a person in the next room who was tied to a chair. And when they turned this dial, it would administer an electric shock to that person. That person in the other room was actually a Confederate and was an actor. And the doctor, Dr. Milgram, who was wearing a stethoscope and a light, you know, a white lab coat, so he had this kind of imprimatur of authority, he would tell the people, turn it up. They could hear the subject screaming, shouting, pleading, begging, crying in the other room and struggling. And all of the people who recruited begged the doctor to allow them to stop. But the doctor said, no, higher, higher. Well, if you can look this up in Wikipedia and actually reports it accurately. It's called the Milgram experiment. 67% of the people turned it up to 250 volts where it was marked potentially lethal. So they knew not to do that. And every value they had to compromise to do that. But they did it because they were taking orders from somebody that they believed was a trusted authority. Mm-hmm. And that's what Milgram concluded, that if you have somebody who's dressed up like a doctor, 67% of the people will violate their most deeply held values. And okay, so we've got, you know, we're just in a huge Milgram experiment here. We got Anthony Fauci in his white lab coat telling people it's okay to get rid of jury trials, which they did, against anybody who's involved in a countermeasure. It's okay to suppress free speech. We all know better than that. It's okay to close every church in our country for a year. Mm-hmm. We know you can't do that. Mm-hmm. There's no pandemic exception in the United States Constitution. And by the way, the framers knew all about pandemics. There were two pandemics during the Revolutionary War, a smallpox and a yellow fever pandemic the smallpox epidemic actually stopped us. We'd already taken control of Montreal. Canada would have been part of the United States except for that pandemic. Between the end of the revolution and the signing of the Constitution, there were epidemics in almost every city that killed tens of thousands of people, cholera, yellow fever, smallpox, et cetera. So they knew all about it. Mm-hmm. They did not put an epidemic exception in the United States Constitution. And so these people knew, okay, you don't abolish property rights. You don't close 3.3 million businesses without due process, without just compensation. You don't completely shut down the Fourth Amendment right to be free of warrantless searches and seizures. And, you know, now you've got to show your medical records mm-hmm. to get into a public building. Mm-hmm. This is all against our Constitution. So we all know you don't violate the Bill of Rights. They violate every single one of the first 10 Bill of Rights, except for the Second Amendment. And so people knew better. They did it anyway. Here's the good news, is that 33% of the people that Milgram recruited got up and walked out. And the people that you're having on this show today are part of that 33%.
Wow. So a big psychological operation, Roger. If you have a lab coat and authority, and you get Dr. Fauci, who seems to be, I'm reading reports Dr. Fauci was doing as much work with the DOD and the intelligence community as just about anything with, you know, bioweapons and whatnot. I mean, again, I go back. You're a historian. You've been on the front line, worked with so many presidents. Again, you got RFK Jr. saying, we got the CIA involved in this stuff. We've got a U.S. congressman saying, what about the CIA connections to voting machine companies? I mean, it seems like this was a coup d'etat, and at the center of it was the intelligence community. And wasn't it Schumer that warned Trump? Don't forget, the intelligence community has six ways from Sunday to get you.
Yeah, I think we've had two major psyops in the country in a short period. First is the entire Russian collusion hoax, which is a hoax. It is based on two pieces of completely fabricated information. The Steele dossier, which the FBI and the Central Intelligence Agency know from the beginning is a fraud. They know it's province. They know it was paid for by Hillary Clinton, and they know it's unverified. But they still use it as the legal rationale for a FISA warrant to spy on aides to Donald Trump as well as Trump himself. And here's the kicker. They're actually using federal funding funneled through the Georgia Institute of Technology to do the surveillance of both President-elect Donald Trump and then President Donald Trump in the White House, the online surveillance going on. And then, of course, there is the fact that Dr. Fauci very clearly uses U.S. taxpayer funds to pay for medical procedures in the Wuhan lab to weaponize the virus, which is then used here to justify the lockdowns, the mandatory vaccinations, the wearing of masks. And here's the most outrageous part. Fauci and his wife, under the rules, are allowed to have stock in these large pharmaceutical companies. So all of the actions that he's making allegedly in the public interest are really lining the pockets of Dr. Fauci and his wife to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. Now, Fauci did this previously. He tried this previously when he was the head of the CDC during the early days of the HIV catastrophe crisis. There was a very simple oral drug, Bactrim, which very successfully treated a very peculiar and specific form of pneumonia that gay men were dying of in the ranks of thousands. But Dr. Fauci would never allow Bactrim to be an on-label prescription use for HIV or for this specific form of pneumonia because he was holding out for a vaccination developed by a company in which he and his wife had stock. They never were able to effect that vaccination, and therefore scores, thousands of people died because of Fauci's unwillingness to legalize a simple drug that had been around since the 50s. It wasn't even expensive. It's the same thing we saw with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Under the federal law, you can't have a vaccination if there is an oral drug that effectively treats the illness. So that's why they had to run this campaign to discredit ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Ivermectin, oh, it's a horse dewormer. Well, the guy who invented it also got a Nobel Prize because of it has so many uses in treating cancer, among other things, not to mention, of course, effectively treating COVID-19. It's the greatest single scandal in our history.
Indeed. All right, before we let you go, Roger, incredible interview. You got some good news yesterday, didn't you?
It was a very, very good news. Actually, it was. It actually took place, I think, Friday, where a D.C. federal judge dismissed all of the counts in a civil lawsuit against me and President Trump related to January 6th. Now, he did not dismiss the case against President Trump, but he did dismiss the case against me. And as I've said on your show many times, I was not at the Ellipse. I did not march to the Capitol. I wasn't at the Capitol. And any claim that I knew in advance about, participated in, or condoned any illegal action on January 6th is false. Eight Capitol Hill police officers brought a lawsuit propped up by a phony George Soros-based front group trying to rope me into something that I have no involvement in whatsoever. It was very, very expensive to fight this lawsuit. I have a $48,000 legal bill I now have to pay. But I praise Jesus and I thank the Lord for answering my prayers. And the judge decided fairly to dismiss us from the case. Now, could they refile these charges tomorrow? Could they appeal that ruling by the judge? They could. And I will have to fight all over again. But so far, so good. I mean, as you know, I've had a number of miracles in my life, the commutation of my sentence, a pardon when I was framed for lying to Congress about non-existent Russian collusion, which is really just an effort to pressure me into testifying falsely against Donald Trump, which I refuse to do. My wife's conquering stage four cancer. That's a miracle. That's the healing power of Jesus Christ is what that is. Walking away from a car wreck just miles from your home and your studio. You remember that day,
absolutely,
Brandon.
Absolutely. Yet,
you know, if my return.
Had it been a little bit more, you would. I'm not so sure you would have been still with us. Yeah, it was not good.
No, I feel blessed, and I am grateful, and I praise the Lord. I offer fulsome praise to the Lord for protecting me in all of those situations. My return to a Twitter, I consider this a miracle. I didn't lobby anybody. I didn't call anybody. I didn't even tell anybody I was seeking reinstatement. All I did was fill out a form, and the new management at Twitter responded. So for that, I am also grateful. Now the most recent miracle, these charges against me being dismissed. So I'm thankful, and I'm exhausted, but it's been a very productive couple of days.
And if they want to help you, they can help you at Stone Defense. What was that again?
StoneDefenseFund.com. StoneDefenseFund.com. Look, I still have at least seven. I just looked at the before the show. Seven pending lawsuits against me, all of which are frivolous, baseless, groundless, but highly sensationalized lawsuits. This is what they call lawfare. These are where liberals, bitter over my pardon, the fact that I'm not dead, file these specious lawsuits against you, which you then have to go out and hire a lawyer to fight. Otherwise, they get a default judgment against you. And I will never stop fighting these. And I will never settle by admitting that I did something I didn't do. But I need people's help to keep the fight going. It has been deleterious. I mean, we lost our home, our car, most of our insurance, our savings, my ability to travel for over 2 years. Thanks to the help of the folks at frankspeech.com, the folks at MyPillow, giving me a great platform, which, of course, is the Stone Zone, which appears right here at Lindell TV, both 2 and 1, 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central. You can get to it most easily by going to stonezone.live. All of these things have helped us stay in the fight.
Absolutely. Yep. And by folks at Frank Speech, you really mean Lindell TV. You were one of our first shows. Mike and I agreed that we wanted to reach out to you and add you to the platform, and you've been with us ever since. And your show and your audience is growing wildly.
Yeah, it's a great home. I'm very grateful to both you and Mike Lindell for being my home port, my sponsoring station. You can watch us on Rumble. You can watch us on Twitter. You can watch us on Getter. You can watch us on Telegram. But our home is Lindell TV too.
Absolutely. And you replay on One too, you know, Roger.
Yes, believe me, I know. I hear about it.
Okay, good deal. Roger Stone, he's one of our favorites here. Thank you, Roger.
It's great to be with you, Brandon. And folks, before you forget, please go to MyPillow.com right now and use promo code Stone.
I knew he was going to do that. All right. Brandon. Thank you, Roger. Appreciate it. That's fine. That's fine if you use Roger's code tonight. I won't say anything.